And now we enter the augmented reality universe of Pokemon. It's taken much of the world by storm, one step at a time, but that may be just a first step. While Pokemon is played for fun, there are many other augmented reality and virtual reality projects up and running or on the drawing board. Joining me to talk about this rapidly emerging world is Nathan Pettyjohn, CEO at Isle 411, Inc., here in St. Louis. He is also the founder of the VR-AR Association, a global community of the leaders in virtual reality and augmented reality. Nathan, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me here, Don.
What an exciting time for people in your field.
Absolutely. I mean, our world has changed, and it happened about 2.5 weeks ago, and we'll remember it as the day Pokemon Go came to our world.
Well, before we proceed along those lines, let's define augmented reality and virtual reality for our audience who may be a little confused.
Yeah, so you hear a lot about virtual reality, and virtual reality is essentially when you see people putting on a headset that covers their eyes and takes you to an entirely virtual world. Everything that's in your real world in front of you is shut out of space. And basically, you're able to move around and feel like you've been transported to another time, another place. And the sensors in these virtual reality headsets are all making this happen. Now, augmented reality is essentially taking digital content and overlaying it on top of the real world. And we've had this to a degree for many years now, where you can point your phone up in the air, and using GPS, you might see information on a building that's kind of overlaid in the real world. But those are really the two differences of VR and AR.
And augmented reality is Pokemon.
Correct.
All right. How do you explain the success of Pokemon right now?
Well, there's really three fundamental things that I think are game-changing about Pokemon. You hear a lot about the augmented reality element of it, but first and foremost, they have a great brand that's been around for many, many years with Pokemon. And you have a lot of followers who are following this. So from a marketing perspective, they had that going for them, and they had a lot of hype and buzz in the market. Second, they've mastered the gaming mechanics of this new game. And then third is where you've really got they've layered in the real world into this game. And they've got rewards that just keep you coming back and yearning for more. But essentially, you know, what happens is you have to go out and collect all of these little Pokemon monsters. They're cute little cartoon characters. And the more you get them, the more addictive the game becomes. But what's different is, just like we look at Google Maps or Apple Maps on our phone now, you can actually see your avatar standing on the street. And as you move around, your little avatar moves around the real world, kind of using basic GPS. But when you see one of these Pokemon monsters, all of a sudden you have to throw a ball at them and catch them. And looking through your phone, you actually see the Pokemon monster standing in front of you in the real space. And that's kind of what's getting people really excited, saying like this is opening up the massive community to what augmented reality is, and it's just a little sliver and taste of what it will be in the coming years.
Well, this is where you come in, and people like you, who can take advantage of this technology and this capability for marketing and sales purposes.
Sure. You know, with our company, Isle 411, we do indoor navigation. So we're in about 14,000 retail stores where we can help you navigate to the shelf of where a product is located. And we've been doing that more traditionally on a bird's eye map that you can look down and kind of see a pin drop, just like we do on some digital maps now. But we're also, for the past 2 years, we've been working on augmented reality navigation indoors. So where Pokemon can place this creature, you know, outside within a couple meters of accuracy, the new augmented reality technology that we're doing for indoor navigation and gamification has 10 centimeter level accuracy. And so we can now start, you know, as you walk around a door, you start to see part of that Pokemon, and then you know, in theory, we're not working on the Pokemon, but it becomes so precise that it gets really, really interesting.
Well, I need a little more detail on this. Let's put Pokemon aside for a moment, and you're in a store, let's say a supermarket. What are you going to be looking at, and how would you use it? In other words, if you want cornflakes, how do you use your device to get you there?
Sure. Well, right now you simply search, you type in or use your voice and say cornflakes, and and literally we drop a pin on the section of the aisle where the cornflakes are located. We could also take your entire shopping list, and as you walk in the store, we're doing this with many retailers where it automatically sorts your list by the aisle, and you can even pull up a map of the store. Then let's say that Wheaties, the competitor to cornflakes, has a coupon. They know you're headed to aisle 5 looking for cornflakes. They can pop up a little message that says, hey, we'll give you 25 cents off of Wheaties today if you buy that. And it's about knowing exactly where you are, knowing exactly what you're looking for, and being able to make recommendations at the exact right moment. That there's a little company called Google that's done a masterful job of that online. And aisle 411 is trying to do that in the real-world buying environment, if that makes sense.
And, of course, when it comes time to pay, you use your phone and your Apple Pay.
Yeah, exactly.
To do that. All you need is a phone anymore to get anything done. How specifically is aisle 411 using this technology? What concerns are you involved with?
Well, when it comes to the augmented reality technology, yeah, we've been working with Google's new framework, which is called Tango. And if I could just explain what that does for a moment. So our phones today have front-facing cameras that we take pictures with. Mm-hmm. These new phones that are launching later this year will have two cameras and a depth sensor on the front of them. So what essentially happens is the phone knows where it is within centimeters of accuracy, up, down, left, right, the XYZ, coordinate system. And so by knowing where exactly that phone is within centimeters of accuracy, all of a sudden, when you walk up to that, the Kellogg's cornflakes, you're not just looking at your phone and seeing a typical banner advertisement for Wheaties. You're seeing up on the shelf a digital coupon that pops out in front of the Wheaties that says, hey, here's 25% off. Come get this. You could even, point your phone at the Wheaties box and get reviews, health information, all augmented on top of your real world. And so what we're trying to do is create more immersive experiences, because we find the more immersed you are with the real world and the brands and products you're buying, you feel more comfort in buying them, and you typically buy more.
I've heard, and this is not brand new, but it's new within the last couple of years, that there is the technology, sounds like what you're doing, where you can walk through the halls of a mall, for instance, and your phone will tell you as you pass individual stores whether there's a sale going on in that particular place as you're passing by. Is that old hat now?
To me, yes. Yeah. For a lot of people haven't experienced that, but yes, that's becoming kind of industry standard now, if you will. And the new realm of this that we're moving into is a world of augmentation and augmented reality. And there are several analysts right now that are estimating in 10 years, no one will have a phone anymore. And I'm seeing this happen. It's hard to imagine, but when you look at the technology that's there, all that has to be done now is to refine it into a smaller form factor, get the cost down a little bit, and this is going to just be pervasive everywhere.
Yeah, I have to take a break, but just to detail that a little bit more for you. Don't have the phone. What do you have?
So you have headwear, glasses, essentially, that have
like Google Glass?
That's right. And so Google Glass launched, and everyone had an idea of what they wanted Google Glass to be. It wasn't ready yet, and I think everyone will say essentially it failed. But there is a new wave of that technology. Within the next 3 to 5 years, you'll start seeing a mass market wearing glasses that have the power of our phones now and much, much more. You'll be able to use simple finger gestures to move information around. And a lot of this is also fueled by artificial intelligence, computing technology. It's amazing.
So you'll be able to switch, I assume, from augmented reality to virtual reality if you've got the glasses on.
That is the dream of a lot of people, yes. So being able to, right now we look at our phones and then all of a sudden we see a YouTube video that we want to watch, and we kind of go into this virtual world essentially of watching this video. But imagine you seeing something interesting that you're looking at, and all of a sudden the rest of the world goes away and you're transported to wherever you want. Let's say it's Hawaii and you feel like you're there.
Well, I want to pick up on those points, but it just occurs to me that people of my generation could be seen walking through the mall in headphones, such as we're wearing now. Your generation and the one that's right behind you will be wearing some strange-looking glasses.
Yeah, I think it's a definite possibility.
We're talking with Nathan Pettyjohn of Aisle 411 here in St. Louis. We're talking about augmented reality, virtual reality, Pokemon, and all of this is taking. We're on the verge of something big, obviously, the way folks are talking and planning. Back to continue this conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Nathan Pettyjohn. You know, Nathan, it occurs to me that if we're going to be entering this augmented reality world, and virtual reality worlds, to the extent that you're describing, that we're going to be giving up something too. And what we're going to be giving up is really kind of conceding to a device, conceding our lives to a device and letting it control and take over our lives. Do you have any sense that something like that could actually happen?
Well, yes, and I think it already has. If we look at our computers and our phones, and you know, you walk anywhere and you see roughly half the people with their heads in their phones, and it's basically, you know, a computer. It's access to information. I think we're becoming in general a smarter society because of this. We have much more access to information quickly at a global scale. And then there's, you know, there are things that you lose in terms of, you know, being able to physically travel places. But one of the unique things that this will open up is a social experience where you can actually feel like, you know, you've traveled somewhere and you're with maybe a family member around the world.
But aren't you missing the real world that's going on around you at that particular moment? If you're looking through those glasses and visualizing a beach in Hawaii when you're trying to cross the street downtown in traffic.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And there are going to be a lot of learning curves that we have as a society to get used to this. And I think, you know, you are seeing some people already that, you know, they're using their phones for various things and they're getting into accidents with them because they're too focused on it. And we're going to have a whole new learning curve when it comes to augmented reality as well.
When it went in defense of this technology, we had some emails and tweets from folks today saying that, you know, they've discovered new parts of the city while playing Pokemon, places they've never been before. One gentleman here, Mark, tweets, "I found a $20 bill while I was on this excursion." So it's not all bad, but I think there are some concerns about also the potential for addiction to these devices. A whole program on NPR this morning on that. People are becoming, and they're using the word, addicted.
Yeah.
That's concerning.
Yeah, it is. And I think we've been facing those issues with computers for many, many years. And the mobility of putting a computer in our hands, which is essentially what a mobile phone is, just makes it easier to access that addiction, if you will. But I think in general, most people would agree that it's enhanced our experience of our lives in general, and being able to communicate with people in new ways faster, getting more business done. All those things are a lot of positives. And there is a give and take, but I think we're going to see the what we're able to take out of this is much greater than what we're giving up.
We have a number of folks who have tweeted and emailed in, and there are questions about this privacy. With what you're doing with the augmented reality and using it as a marketing strategy, if you will, how can you or can you protect the privacy of the user?
Well, there's a lot of data that needs to be used to understand, you know, where your mobile device is. And, you know, just like we're accessing Google Maps today, you know, you have to give something up. You have to give up a little privacy if you want to be able to navigate your city. And
that's a slippery slope, man.
It is. And you really just have to, you have to trust the companies that are doing this, that A, you know, they have all the right intentions in place, and B, that their security is of the highest quality, and there are security breaches that do happen. So it's definitely going to be exponential in terms of the data that's going to be needed to be secured in an augmented reality world.
Yeah, but we see what's going on with the Russians today and the accusations that they are hacking into the Democratic National Committee resources and what have you. I mean, you talk about trust. How do you know whom to trust? You don't know who's out there. You don't know who's pulling the strings.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I don't have the answers for exactly, you know, how you figure that out. You look at Pokemon Go, for example, as we go back to that kind of theme. That application is asking for a lot of access to your Gmail, your Google account, and they're doing it primarily to deliver a great gaming experience. I believe they did have a small hack already as well, and so these measures cannot be taken for granted at all, and they are utterly important.
Obviously, you're enthusiastic about the technology, but what are your concerns? Are these concerns the things we've just been talking about?
Yeah, they definitely are. And as we look at the market growing, there's kind of a chicken and an egg that happens. You have to get devices in people's hands that can use this, and then you have to have like software applications that make the devices useful. And so, you know, trying to balance those in the right respect is definitely a concern for a business to look at and say, you know, how are we going to balance how much we invest in software to time it just right so that all these devices are in market?
You know, I can see it in some ways becoming kind of a pain in the neck, too, going back to the Kellogg's cornflakes in the supermarket. Once your telephone learns, your cell phone learns that you like Kellogg's cornflakes, that you're going to be bombarded by things that are related to that somehow. Now that they know that about you, they can try to sell you something else.
Yeah.
We're there. We're there with Google now, aren't we?
We are, yeah. And, you know, you look for a product and you'll be on a dozen different websites and you'll see an advertisement for that product you looked at yesterday. It's happening right now. And with augmented reality, that's likely going to happen in your real world. And there's going to be a fine balance between the application providers that do it right and the ones who overwhelm you and turn off consumers.
Yeah. We have a couple of callers and some emailers here we'll get to in a moment. But before we do that, where is this going? I mean, what's being worked on now that is probably so far out there that people like myself would have no clue that this is something that could happen?
Wow, that's a great question. Well, I will say there's an interesting company right now called Meta that's out in San Francisco area. And they are building glasses where essentially they want you to be able to never have to buy a computer workstation again. And so literally you're able to look into through some glasses and see five different screens in front of you, move your fingers around that can detect millimeter precision of movement. And they're showing that like you can interact with, you know, word processing and PowerPoint types of solutions, spreadsheets, and be on average 30% more productive without having any screen in front of you. So those are the kinds of things that I think people are really going to go, oh my gosh, the whole workplace, everything I do now is going to be changing.
Boy, it just makes me wonder if we're giving up any of our own intellectual capacity and kind of turning it over to technology.
We are.
I mean, almost becoming robots and slaves and prisoners, if you will, of the technology.
There are a lot of people that do argue that, and to a degree, you know, we are giving up some of that. It's a give and a take. You know, we're letting computers make decisions for us in a lot of cases, but we're getting access to more information and maybe focusing on things we would prefer to focus on.
How much privacy are you willing to give up?
That's an excellent question. there are a lot of factors in there. I think that in general, we're seeing our younger generation more and more willing to give up more and more privacy every day. So,
I think of things like I think it's Samsung that has a television now that you can that can hear you in your living room when you're having a conversation and can react accordingly. But you can also hear the things that you're not asking the television set to do.
Yeah,
somewhere somehow that could be recorded and used against you, used for you, whatever.
Yeah, it is a little scary. And our society is going to have to get used to it. You know, I think when Google Glass came out, people were like if you saw someone wearing Google Glass, you were a little scared of them. Are they recording me? But yet we look around and people are recording with their phones all the time, especially at like a concert or a sporting event.
And crime events, which sometimes have been very helpful to law enforcement. Let's take a call or two in the time we have left. We'll bring in Mike calling from St. Louis. Mike, thanks for being with us, but make it brief, please.
Hey, Don.
Hi.
Fasten your seatbelt because it's going faster and faster. And we, you know, our privacy, we really can't. We have to accept the fact that our privacy is different than it was back in the day. But it's really diversity of input that's going to save us from the future. But I made up a term a few years ago, which I called a visceral dumb human, which is what we are right now, unupgraded with all the technology. And I like that, but I understand we're not going to be here that long in that state. So I actually started thinking about this in 1967 when I happened to see a computer conference empty, and I just wondered about a virtual future someday. But I didn't think it'd be here this quickly.
All righty. Well, thank you for the call. It's here, and it's not going away, Nathan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. It's accelerating faster and faster every day.
A virtual future. That's an interesting one.
Right.
Who knows? Who knows? Let's take another call. Mason joins us from Godfrey. But Mason, it'll have to be quick. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for having me on. Longtime listener, first-time caller.
Great.
Yeah, just wanted to give you a call. I'm a 28-year-old man. I look around at my peers and the college environment. Everybody's glued to their phones. It seems like their attention span gets shorter and shorter by the day. And while I understand that we need to accept that technology is doing this to us, that doesn't mean we need to approve of it. And it's important that we keep our common sense. And, you know, the constant distraction is really... It's driving down learning from what I've seen. So, you know, just my recommendation is to turn off your device every once in a while and take a tech holiday.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call. That is it. This program on addiction today, Nathan, suggested that. I mean, they're literally taking the technology away from young people in particular because they are mesmerized by it 12, 14 hours a day.
Yeah. And, you know, we've probably all heard moderation in all things is a good philosophy to live by. And I think it goes the same for our technology.
One of the things that occurs to me, is, as you've indicated earlier, is we have access to all of this information potentially, but we're getting that information in smaller bites. We have the potential to get it in larger amounts of content, but are content to get it in paragraphs instead of chapters.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, look at the success of Twitter, 140 characters of little bits of information. And I think what's interesting, though, is we can get access to those small bits of information much, much faster. I mean, think 20 years ago how long it took to get information and read a newspaper. I mean, we can access so much information, and we're able to focus on the things we want to read and ingest versus just accepting, you know, what's out there right now.
Yeah, well, there certainly are many options. Let's talk a moment about aisle 411. You're here in St. Louis. Are you a St. Louisan?
Not originally, but a Missourian. Yeah.
That's close enough. That counts. why are you here in St. Louis? I mean, it seems like what you're doing, you should be in Silicon Valley or someplace like that.
Yeah, well, we have some partnerships out in Silicon Valley, but we found that there is a really good talent pool of computer science and engineering talent here in St. Louis. Washington University, as a matter of fact, is one of the best in the country in terms of computer science programs. In fact, a lot of companies on the coast, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, they're hiring a lot of engineers from Washington University. We found that we were able to pull in a lot of talent there. Additionally, there's a lot of funding being put to work. You know, we've raised venture capital, many millions of dollars that have been invested. And St. Louis right now is I would say, booming in terms of their investment in new technology startup companies. There's venture capital, there's angel investments. So we've essentially, as a company, you have to have talent and you have to have investment dollars, the ability to access that, and then you need customers. And we found in our day, St. Louis is actually good being right in the middle of the country. And our accounts have been all over North America, and we're now expanding overseas.
That is terrific. In 15 seconds, what's the next big thing?
Oh, my gosh. That's a great question. I would say, you know, look for augmented reality glasses in 2 to 3 years, and it's going to transform everything we know.
Oh, wow.
It's, yeah.
What a prospect. Nathan Pettyjohn, thank you so much from aisle 411. Thank you so much for being with us. Fascinating discussion. Can't wait to see what happens next. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.